just the fact that the scariest thing that could happen to you happens, and then you're still there. And all that builds a type of self-esteem you cannot learn. You have to embody it. It's your body recognizing that it traversed through this difficult experience and it's still there supporting you.
Welcome to The Confident Healer. I'm your host, Sharmila Mali. And in this podcast, we have inspirational, uplifting, and soulful conversations about the ins and outs of having confidence as a healer and as a healer in business. My next guest wanted to record this episode on the Lion's Gate, which was on August 8th. So the Lion Gate's energy is all about more fully awakening your divine light and embodying divinity within a physical form. After our interview, I understand why she chose that date to tell her story. She went through a profound and tragic experience that fundamentally altered her life on every single level. You're about to get a huge heart activation. So sit back and receive. Her bright energy and her message offers hope to so many people going through so much loss right now. Welcome to the Confident Healer Podcast. I'm your host, Sharmila Mali. This is episode 4 in season 1. Already episode 4. So today I have a very special guest. I'll be talking to a beautiful soul who has an extraordinary story about her life-changing experience when she was living in Mexico. She's a medium, an intuitive healer, and a moon dancer. So please welcome with a big warm hug. Welcome, my dear.
Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction, Sharmila. I'm so glad to be here.
Me too. I'm so glad you're here and that you are going to share this really amazing story. But before we go into that, I was on my way over to the office to do this interview, I was thinking, like, you know, if I'm a private person. Mm-hmm. I don't put stuff on social media about what I'm going through because I talk about it with my friends and, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about, like, wow, if I had the same experience, would I talk about it? I mean, I would probably talk about it to other people, but would I put it out publicly? And so I'm just wondering why you answered the call. Like, when I was looking for speakers, mm-hmm. what made you answer, mm-hmm. like, hey, I want to be mm-hmm. a guest on the show?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's really interesting you asked that, because right before hopping on the call, I got this Facebook notification of a post I had made around the time this happened. And my mom had written this quote that hopelessness is suffering without purpose. And I recognize that everything that happened in that time could be redeemed if I could find a way to share the story and impact people positively who may feel hopeless, and truly share this wonderful gift I encountered of seeing life as perfect and absolutely on your side. Absolutely. There's not a doubt I have about that. And it all comes from this seemingly very painful life experience that took place and that I fully recognize as part of my past.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. That, you know, because we could have talked, I mean, we'll talk about a lot of things, mm-hmm. about all your different healing abilities. And I just, I'm just so grateful that you are willing to speak about that, about this climactic experience that led you to where you are now. Because of what I just said, like, it's a painful experience, something that, you know, you don't really want to share too often. Mm-hmm. And so I think you were saying before we started recording, mm-hmm. saying that you felt ready to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it took some time.
Well, I have to say, right after it happened, I talked about it a lot, but it was a way of processing it.
Right.
And then I decided...
But not like on a podcast.
No. This is the first time. I've shared the story in front of people only about a month ago for the first time. And it was the first time I shared it in front of others in that way. And this will be the second time. But every time I share it, I find new wisdom in the story myself. Mm. So I trust that this came into my field right now because something about the story can help someone out there in these very, very challenging times that we're living in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You went to a Vipassana retreat, which is a 10-day mm-hmm. silent meditation retreat. And so mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, like, were you, what was your spiritual life like before that? Were you delving mm-hmm. into metaphysics?
Yeah.
Gone mm-hmm. to healers? Were you a healer before that too? Or?
Mm-hmm. I think I was always interested in spirituality and I feel like an old soul to myself. So I believe that when you feel that way, there's just like a spiritual undertone to life. And it didn't really become apparent to me until that year. And the reason why I had gone to that retreat was that nothing was really working in my life. Like I had lost my job in a very disorienting way. And my relationship to Jorge was not as well as I hoped it could be. And I realized that I still had wounds around worthiness that I wanted to heal. And so I signed up for this meditation retreat with that intention. But so much happened, like I mentioned.
Right.
I had never gone that deep. No.
Mm. And were you doing the same work, working with at-risk youths at that time? What was the work that was so disorienting? Yeah.
No, I was living on the coast of Oaxaca in a place called Puerto Escondido with my partner at the time, Jorge, who was an artist. He was a painter. And I really supported him and his dreams a lot because I believed in the conviction of what he was here to do. And at the same time, I was very interested in the arts myself, and he helped me get a job at an art residency near where we lived, which really opened my perception of the art world and also how to make it, how to bridge a gap between the art world and the artisans that are out in the world creating things, because that's what the art residency sought out to do. But how I left that space felt disorienting because I did love that job and I felt like I was getting a lot out of it. But some internal things happened. It was not ideal for me to live through that at the time, but it did push me into the space of wanting to reflect deeper on what's my purpose in life. Mm-hmm. And then all this stuff happened and unraveled and time became irrelevant in that search. Like, I feel like that question is still present in my life, but all these things had to happen to give that answer new dimensions.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That can be a lot. And then... Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. losing a job that wasn't perfect, but there was the aspect of getting into the arts and being around artists, mm-hmm. exploring yep. your own artistic nature, and then mm-hmm. Having it disappear. So then mm-hmm. so then it's just like, but see, like, I mean, we've all had things like that, but I'm like, I'm mm-hmm. not gonna do a 10-day retreat, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's where I think that the whatever we find is invisible to us is operating, because I just had this strong intuition that I needed to go to this meditation retreat.
Mm.
And I don't know what the parallel experience would have been like, right. but I had not had that as a preface to what then unveiled itself to me, I don't know where I would be. It definitely feels like it was in alignment with everything that was about to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And then where did you do the, how did you find out about the Vipassana retreat?
So I will say this wasn't technically a Vipassana retreat. Oh. I've done Vipassana retreats. This was a 10-day silent meditation retreat. But it was with the focus in the heart, and it's called Hridaya meditation. And you meditate on the spiritual heart for 100 hours in 10 days. So it's a lot of opening that is taking place. And there's no escape. And it's the same experience. It's the same exact experience we're having now. There's no escape from yourself. And the more you look in, the deeper you go. Except now, when you're not in a meditation situation, you also share with your community, with your surroundings. But we're constantly being asked to come back to ourselves during this time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's similar.
Okay, so we've built this up. Let's dive into what happened.
This was exactly 4 years and 3 months ago. Oh, it was also on an 8th, I realized today.
Oh.
It was on May 8th, 2016. But yeah, two weeks prior to that, I had gone to this meditation retreat that was really pushing me further than I had gone. And on the 10th day, after going quite deep, we talked about death. And I had taken this break also from my partnership with Jorge because we kept clashing in the same exact place. And I wanted to find a new way to navigate the situations we kept getting stuck in. Mm-hmm. And I wanted new perspectives. And I just missed him so much when I was away. And I remember the 10th day, the instructor reading a story about a man who loses his wife to cancer after about 5 years of being beside her during this journey.
Mm-hmm.
And it so profoundly touched my soul and connected me to the experience of what it would be like to lose Jorge, who was probably the thing I valued the most in my life at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully experienced that because the way that he was describing his wife, her personality was also very, very similar to his.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So it really, it overwhelmed me with emotion. And I remember crying out loud in a room full of 50 people after 10 days of silence. And then other people started crying, I remember. Mm-hmm. But when the retreat ended, I was very happy to reconnect with Jorge. He picked me up at the Turtle Museum. I still remember that. And he was so grateful to see me again. I think a part of him was scared that I had reconsidered the relationship altogether while I was reflecting and diving deep, which is something that happens in relationships sometimes when you go deeper. But no, we discovered that we were extremely aligned. We were very aligned at that time. And in that time frame, he seemed to be reflecting on things that felt bigger than before. Like he had asked me, we were watching that film, that Iranian film, A Separation, which deals with divorce, and it's a beautiful film. But I remember him just getting emotional and pondering about the potential for us to separate one day. And then he asked me, like, how would you want your funeral?
Wow.
And I know. And it just seemed like such a surprising question for a couple that's like young and full of energy.
Right.
That I didn't know how to answer. I kind of laughed. And I think I said, I haven't really thought about that. And what about you? And he told me that he wanted it to be a party, a celebration of his life. And that he wanted to be exhibited kind of like a sculpture in in a space with his loved ones where he was paralyzed in the form of a fisherman, like the sculpture of a spearfisher.
Oh.
Very okay. specific, very yeah. specific. And then to be placed into a casket in the shape of a parrotfish, a blue parrotfish, which was his favorite fish.
Oh.
He was learning how to spearfish during this time. He was obsessed with it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I was like, all right, that's amazing. You can be so specific about what you want right. For your funeral. And then, to be placed in this casket. And, it just felt so specific to me. And I remembered it, of course. I remember that we had this conversation. And then a week and a half later, I mean, things could not have been better in our relationship. And I almost thought, like, this is the zenith, you know? You don't really get past this. I kind of feel like an old couple with you. And yeah, we're just truly at peace with what the other one is and letting the other person be what they want to be and giving them space to do that. And then Mother's Day was approaching and his mom, who's a math professor, came from Mexico City to celebrate. And she really liked the fish that Jorge caught.
Right.
So she asked him to get a blue parrotfish for her. For Mother's Day. And so that day, I remember there were a few delays here and there. And eventually we made it to the beach where we were going to drop him off. And then we were going to go to a different beach. And he was going to kind of go around this big rock that would take him about an hour or 2 hours to travel oh. through.
Wow, okay.
And then meet us at the other beach. And this is all by himself. Most mm-hmm. spearfishers go with a partner because it's dangerous. He had shown me videos of people who black out because the pressure difference can be so drastically different and fast. Like when you come up, you really have to pace yourself so that your body has time to adjust.
So is that with like scuba gear or?
No scuba gear, just free diving.
Free diving,
wow. All lung and pace and pacing yourself and being very connected to the elements so that you know how to come up and at what pace and what's around you. I mean, it takes a hyper awareness, definitely, and true confidence in yourself in the ocean, right?
Right.
Yeah, but that's part of the challenge and that was part of the addictive component, I think. I don't know if I want to call it addictive, but it's one thing that people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's you're playing with danger, and that's mm-hmm. fun. That's fun to be able to observe yourself do that. So when he said goodbye, he just asked me for a kiss and said, "I think this is going to be the last kiss," and I was really surprised. I was really surprised and taken aback, but he was the kind of person that spoke like that. So I also thought to myself, like, oh, this is just you being dramatic.
Right. Oh, my God.
And he said, oh, no, I just feel like maybe there's a shark or something. And he laughed.
Shit.
And I was like, all right, well, you go do you.
Oh, my God. But like, so you just was like, I would have been like, oh, my God, please don't go. But yeah.
I mean, I had no idea. It also sounded so right for him. It's like, right. do that thing that you feel like you have to do, even though you're actually telling me it's going to be the last time I see you.
Right.
All right. You know, that's how life works. You can't stop it.
Right.
So he went out and his mom and I went to get shrimp tacos at this beach where he was supposed to come out of. And the fishermen that hang out in that area knew him because he would stay out late. Mm-hmm. And I had already gotten upset about that because I felt like it was unnecessarily dangerous. It's like, you're already going out. Why do you need to go out until nighttime? That's so dangerous. So I thought it was that. I thought that he was staying out late because the hours went by and we couldn't find him. He wasn't coming out of the ocean. And his mom and I are both kind of like, you know, we're not people that want to worry. So we kind of just played it cool for a while.
Right.
And then at one point, we just kind of looked at each other and thought like, well, where's this guy? You know, he's been gone for so long. Something doesn't feel right, but I'm not going to give into that feeling because I don't want to play into the fear.
Right.
But at some point, it was just too late. It was just too late. And we started calling the firefighters and the policemen. And we were received, as you're received in rural Mexico by authorities, which is like, take care of it yourself, basically. And yeah. And so we started calling his friends. Like, he had a great community of friends. He had been going to this beach town since he was a kid, even though he was from Mexico City. And he really prided himself in getting along and having so much community in this place. Like, he was just very proud of it, that he had managed to get along with the locals because the locals don't like the city people, basically.
Right.
So he felt very special about that. And it's true. It's true. Those people were there for us. They were the first ones that came out, his friends from childhood, who he didn't see as often as he'd like to, but who were there in the hard times kind of friends. And they showed up, and we started looking for him in the surrounding areas around the rock where he, you know, the rock that he was going to pass. The rock is surrounded by rough waters. So that's kind of where we stationed ourselves, this rock in between these two beaches where we had dropped him off and where he was going to come out. And I think it was like 10 p.m. at this point.
Oh my
where
God.
We're like looking for him. You can imagine, like, I'm just calling out his name, sometimes getting emotional, sometimes screaming, sometimes like in despair, sometimes hopeful. Everything, I don't really remember everything that happened because it's kind of a blur. But I remember that at one point we were getting ready to give up. And actually the only, I guess, uniformed entity that came to support us were the lifeguards. So I was genuinely very grateful to the lifeguards because they showed a lot of support. And they were out there swimming in the rough waters, but they had told me, listen, it's getting too late to look for his body, and it could be anywhere. Like, if he passed on, his body could have been dragged by the water into a completely different beach.
Right.
And I just remember thinking, like, you know, at this point I can accept if he died, but I would absolutely need to see his body. Like, there's no way that I can accept that. So can you please just keep looking, please?
Wow.
And it was about midnight. And then our neighbor came. Our neighbor, who Jorge thought didn't like him, came. Mm-hmm. He is a very good free diver. And he went into the water. It was very rough. He went into the water from this boat. And they found first someone else had found his spear. And attached to the spear was a blue parrotfish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they found that he caught a blue parrotfish. And then maybe like an hour later, they found his body and they took it out like right in front of us. Ooh. And at this point, it was 1:30 in the morning.
Oh my God.
And I just remember connecting very deeply to Jorge's mom. And just wondering like what that must feel like and just needing to be strong for her because I needed to, that was my service to him. If I could have any way of thanking him for everything that we lived through together, was to support his family. And his sister was at the beach where we eventually went to pick up his body. And he and his sister hadn't been getting along, but he had told me that I would be part of the healing process between them. And, you know, when this happened, I was like, all right, well, I'm about to embark on a major healing journey with Jorge's family too.
Mm-hmm.
But before that happened, I just remember looking at his body and seeing it precisely the way he had described it, like he was a sculpture of a spearfisher.
Wow. Oh, my God.
And he had caught this blue parrotfish.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, how in the world did you know that? And can I even, like, question what is happening right now? Because you intuited it in some way. Mm-hmm. And why did you speak about your death, right? He was very bloated with ocean water, and it was unclear what had happened to him. So we took him to the funeral home, and I remember the bonding experience that ensued with his mom, where we had to pick a casket, and he and I were both tall. I mean, he was tall, and yeah, she just kind of used me as like a body reference to decide on which casket we were going to get for him.
Oh my God, that's so surreal.
It is surreal. And like, we entered a surreal land, and Mexico is a very surreal land also, by the way. And the way that they perceive death is just like, it's completely different than the way we perceive it here. And that was part of Jorge's atmosphere, his personality, was how to confront you with the discomfort of death constantly. And he was doing it as a hobby, but he also did it just in the way he mocked it. So a part of what he considered death had to become my definition of death to like truly honor him. And I was like, who am I to say that death is bad? I'm not all knowing. And it seems like he wasn't scared of it. And when it all happened the way he maybe wanted it to happen, mm-hmm. it feels expansive in that way. I mean, when you think about a man who's practically obsessed with the ocean, dying in the depths of the ocean, it's kind of like a huge metaphor for how he chose to live his life. So I couldn't really be upset about it. I was energetically transformed. I just remember my body just tingling everywhere, just tingles everywhere. I think that was one of the most divine sleeps that I ever had. Like, I think around that time, I remember just laying down in the room that we shared so much in, and just laying down and just feeling his presence so strongly.
Wow.
That I knew death didn't exist. In that moment, I was like, oh, wow. No, it's absolutely not what I thought it was going to be like. Absolutely not. It is not all full of suffering. Yes, it was hard to adjust to not having my best friend around and physically hugging him. But whatever I was taught about life through that experience was like, wow, I'm deeply humbled that he chose me to walk along his side when that happened. And I just felt like sharing that. I felt like how many people get to experience reciprocal love at age 25, 26? To then like make room for all other things that happen in life. I mean, that is like a huge human longing, is to just experience that. And I remember when I started thinking about my mortality, telling myself that the one thing I wanted to experience was reciprocal love. Mm-hmm. And that once that happened, I think I would be able to accept death. It wouldn't scare me anymore. Mm-hmm. And also just the fact that the scariest thing that could happen to you happens, and then you're still there. Mm-hmm. And all that builds a type of self-esteem you cannot learn. You have to embody it. It's your body recognizing that it traversed through this difficult experience, and it's still there supporting you, which is what we're all going through right now collectively. Mm-hmm. The resilience of acknowledging, I'm still here. This is all happening in this world right now.
Yep.
And I was reminded of him also because he talked about World War III a lot and what that would look like. And so much of what he talked about does remind me of this time, to be honest. There are snippets of it, and he would send me articles about it, and I was like, wow, why are you so obsessed with World War III, you know? And I was like, of course, because you were part of your mission in my life was to prepare me for this.
Hmm.
But what is happening right now is like a humongous shift, and I can't relate to death in the same way that I did before this happened. To me, death is just, yeah, absolutely, there's grief. And I want to validate that for anyone that's experiencing the loss of a loved one. It was a very long journey for me, but it's a very, very, very worthwhile and rich journey if you just let it break your heart and transform you completely. Just let it transform you, and you come out of that understanding, accepting what life really is. And also accepting that you don't know so many things. So why attach so much suffering and negativity around that?
Yeah.
I know that I kind of jumped from the event to my conclusions, but
no.
I don't know how much detail you want about the story. I really feel like, I hope that it is communicated that I feel very natural about what happened.
Yeah. I think I get that. And I think I think others will also get that too. It's just the way you're describing it. And yeah, I'm just kind of like, I just need to take that in.
Yeah. Mom, like a little rest from the intensity. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had just said how your perspective on life changed. So what do you think of life?
Well, I definitely know that we are multidimensional beings and we connect in so many ways. We don't connect just by hopping on a call and talking to one another. You can truly like send love to a soul that has transcended, and that energy is connecting to you. You can connect to people in Lebanon who right now are really facing insane levels of hardship, and you can truly send love, and that means something. And I know in this society there's this hesitation to do that because, you know, prayers don't resolve problems. But when you're truly in a state of prayer and you care about people, what starts happening in this planet is that all of us get to experience more love and peace.
Absolutely.
And we are like a walking energy field. So I don't even have to share my story with people to live my story. Right. And I think that's real for everyone. But the more you embrace it as a part of you, nobody can change what has happened to them. Nobody. But the more you own it and you give it the tone you want it to have. Do you want it to have a tragic tone? Then you can tell that story, and that might be useful in some contexts. But just for people to even consider, what's the tone that I want to tell my story, and what's the frequency I am sending out to the world? Because it is all a consequence of everything that has happened to you, and it's all energy that can be harnessed and transformed and turned into love and higher levels of love. It's only when you touch the depths of darkness that you can really appreciate joy and compassion and really, really understand what compassion is.
Right. Yeah.
Because you know what it's like when your heart gets broken. So it's really not, it's not a curse. It's not a misfortune. It's a blessing. Nobody belongs to us. Nothing belongs to us in this life. Whatever time we have on this planet is to share light and love, and to also work on that darkness. If you have the privilege to work on it with someone else, that's a gift. Thank them for walking however long they've walked with you, trying to get you to see life in a different way so that you can experience it with more love and less fear. And that's the time we're living in. We're living out the heartbreak of this this distance between people who are choosing love right now and people who are really cemented in a state of fear. And how much compassion can you send out to those people who are immersed in fear without hurting your own ability to experience love? Right. That's a challenge for any sensitive person and any person that wants to be in service right now. But we all have to put in our part, and we are all reflecting on our own stories because we've been quarantined alone to revisit those stories up until maybe like May, the 4th year anniversary of his death. I think that a part of me was still processing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because grief is not linear. You have no idea when it's going to creep up on you again. And for you to be served new medicine, it's like, oh, wow, I didn't know this about this experience. I didn't know these sensations about this experience. But there's so much pressure for death to be like finite.
Right.
I have closed this chapter in my life and I have put it aside. Mm-hmm. Yes. And if I don't, there's something wrong with me, you know?
Right. I think especially in this American culture, it's like that, you know, there's no hands-on, they're in a box. It's just sort of, sounds harsh to say, but it's kind of sterile.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, maybe you sit, you know, you go to a memorial and that's it, you know, and it's in other cultures, like in mine, there's a 10 day, the immediate family is isolated, you know, you can't, can't go anywhere. You can't go to work. You know, you're in a state of mourning, so you have to deal with it. And I think this is an ongoing journey for you, and it's a 4-year process at least. Wait, four? Yeah, mm-hmm. Six.
Four years. Yeah.
Let's do the math. Numbers don't matter.
Numbers do matter in a weird way. That's the thing. Like, why is today August 8th? I didn't pick this date. Well, today is Lionsgate, but I did think of, I love eights, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eight's a lucky number.
But I had forgotten that, I wasn't conscious that he had died on the 8th.
Wow.
I mean, of May, which is also, it's just such a significant day for me. And I think a lot about the things that happened to me on AIDS. Anyway, I know that must sound bizarre to many people, but
no, probably not to our listeners.
but that's the world we live in. If you're paying attention, you're saying it's all code and we're being communicated with all the time. It's just, what is the meaning is the question. Like, okay, what do you want me to do with this information? I ask the universe that all the time because they're making their presence very known.
Right.
Like the fact that right before I hopped on this call, Jorge's sister messaged on like old Facebook posts that I had made on Jorge's wall when he died. Uh-huh. I'm like, why? Why are you making yourself known right now, right? Mm-hmm. You're making yourself known because you want me to know that you're here with me.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here with me as I talk about the lessons your soul taught me when it was on this plane. I don't really know what what his soul is living out now, but I know that it's alive in the universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, everything that you've talked about, this whole experience, I think it's just a beautiful teaching tool when you're ready, when someone is ready to see it as that way, because sometimes, you know, in your grief, you can't see it as a blessing. You can't see the many beautiful lessons that you get from the passing of a loved one. That's what you're saying, is just being present with it. You know, you had kind of a little bit of a training in the meditation center. Mm-hmm. And there was just something that came up when you were talking about it. So you were saying that Mexico people treat death differently than they do in the US.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I think that it's very real that the spirit lives on there, and the way that's celebrated,
right,
and the way it's acknowledged, it makes the healing process possible over a large span of time. Like at the 1 year anniversary of your loved one, you have another party. You make tamales and you spend all night remembering that person because that's the way it works. You know, in this society, you have no idea if your coworker is living out the death anniversary of a parent. And they probably won't tell you either, right, because that feels like a very private, taboo thing to speak about.
Right.
But now, like, I really hope that now, after 160 something thousand people, souls have left this plane and in this country alone, I hope that people have the capacity to speak about it, because otherwise, how are you going to heal? Are you just going to pretend like that's not painful for you?
Right.
It's okay. There are so many endless ways of interpreting that in your life, but hiding it is not one that I have found productive.
Right.
It's not something that you can change. And honestly, I will say that for a long time, I was like, well, if I ever decide to date again, like, this is something that I have to hide from those people, because, I mean, that relationship never ended. It will live on forever.
Mm.
And hopefully that's the source of, that's something that reflects who I am, and not something that I have to process in order to be in relationship again. Because it's so a part of me that unless it's embraced, you know, I'm not interested in talking or having a relationship with that person, because it's a part of me.
Yeah,
I don't want to change it. So yeah, I think that can be transferred over to people who are grieving in general. Like, that's something that we might feel shame around, that we have to hide, and that breaks my heart. Like, please come as you are, wherever you're going, and let people adapt to that, because that's real. I don't understand why there's so much pressure on someone that's grieving to adapt to everything else. There's so much pressure. Like, go take time for yourself. Like, go heal yourself, and then be a part of society. No. Be a part of society and present that to society, and let's emerge. Let's build collective spaces for grieving and accepting that life is not always easy.
Living here in the U.S. for as long as I have, I think it's just, there's this mentality of just, okay, just put one foot in front of the other. Stand up straight and walk forward, you know, and not think about the past. No one wants to think about it. But it's a part of you, you know, and I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, I think it's messy. People don't want to deal with it because, you know, in this society, people are, you know, being vulnerable in terms of crying and dealing with your grief. I think that's, I think a lot of people just, you know, they're just kind of raised to like, it's, you know, that quietly alone by yourself.
Right.
Don't get for it. Like, there's something wrong with you. And I think, that part of grief, and it's really unfortunate because I've just seen when people have lost a loved one, it just your whole world crumbles, and especially if it's a parent, you know, it's like, you know, that's your grounding, you know, that's who brought you into the world, and they're not there anymore physically, you know, and I think it's hard to grapple with that. And then you've got the spiritual aspect of like, oh, they're visiting you, and you're like, oh my God, I don't know what's happening, you know? So that's also what's extraordinary about that is that, you know, you had some, it sounds like you had a lot of experience with your own spiritual life and meditating. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't too far-fetched to have you know, Jorge have this experience and then it happened. It's like, what, you know, just in the midst of the chaos of finding his body and like, and then seeing his body and exactly the way he described it. And then feeling his presence, you know, as you went to sleep and whatnot. So, so after this experience, is that when like your, you know, the mediumship abilities and your intuitive healing came forward, just like bursting out the door?
I think that my channel really opened and, and that was very confusing because there's, if we were able to see, we probably would experience life kind of like a cat, you know? It's like you catch these different things, moving parts around the environment, and you're like, wait, what is that? And I really think that that's what we're experiencing all the time. Like, it's very present, like in a moment where you don't feel grounded, which happens. It happens to me where I just feel like there's a lot that's coming into my field and I'm trying to adjust to it and make sense of it all the time. And some of that is guidance from spirits. Some of that could be, you know, energy of spirits around. It's really happening. And right now where we don't really know, we can't really see how this big shift of souls kind of merging into the cosmos, what is happening when you, when the veil is actually gone, what is actually happening energetically around us? Like we can start to feel maybe goosebumps or just, it's really, it's been a process, but I know even like spirits from other planets are present here. They're very present and they're very light also. We're very dense as humans.
Yeah.
We have a lot of work to do. but spirits
Earth from, school, as it's called.
Yes. Spirits from other planets are quite light. And those came into my awareness around the time when Jorge died. I mean, days later, that came into my awareness. And I don't want to talk too much about that, but just that I was presented with a very clear example that aliens are a part of what's happening now, and that I was so open to it. I will also add that, I mentioned I felt so good after Jorge died. I felt so good in that my body field felt very light, and I also felt incredibly beautiful. I felt completely transparent. Like there's nothing that I need to hide. If this doesn't make me lovable, just like this level of vulnerability, nothing will, you know?
Right.
I was truly, I would say at my most, at that point I felt my most beautiful, and that just showed me that everything that I was attracting into my life was a reflection of that, how open my heart was. And this information that started coming into my field of, you know, the role that aliens are playing in this. And for those of us who are more skeptical, like you can even find information about this on the New York Times now. So I encourage just the fact that aliens are here, they're with us.
But what's their role in the pandemic, if you don't mind?
I mean, I think the pandemic is a huge dimensional shift. Like it's, we've been leading up to it. Some of us have been intuitively preparing for it. And then the Earth, the dimensional space of the Earth, of the planet, is changing. And it's all energetics. And I'm not a physics expert. But what happens in that process is that some people's bodies and energy fields cannot withstand this shift. Their bodies are not ready for it. And that's why it's incredibly important to exercise and just do your routine. nourish your body, do everything that is going to put you in a place of accepting more and more stimulation into your body, because we are on a wild roller coaster ride, but we are taking off. We're taking off. And when we come out of this, we will no longer be captive to this black and white thinking that's manifesting itself in so many different ways. Yes. In politics, race, I mean, you name it. We will truly be able to live from a place where we sustain all perspectives in a field of harmony, of acceptance, and from that place, make decisions to restore the world. We're not reactive as we are now, where we can see life. We have deconditioned ourselves from so many limiting beliefs that have been taught to us via religion and race. I mean, all of these distortions of reality, the fact that we truly are made of the same material, all of us are stardust, we really are, and we're all lovable, we're inherently lovable, and we're all here to serve a purpose. And there's no comparison in this plane. You're not comparing yourself to another person and wasting so much time on that, because you recognize it's a collaborative experiment. What we're doing on Earth is a collaboration to get to this higher dimension of life. Like, we are all working toward that right now. However much you're putting in to that evolution is what you're putting into yourself right now. So I do it for myself, but I do it for the collective every day. Every day. You cannot take a day off right now. You shouldn't. I mean, you can if you must, but try to get back on the horse as soon as possible, because we're all interconnected and we all need that. We all need everyone doing the work right now.
So what is your work that you do? What are the practices that that you're doing now?
I'm doing a lot of Kundalini yoga, and I highly recommend that for building energy in the system, because we need to be stronger than the fear-based stimulation that's coming at us. We need to be rise above it and truly be in control of our lives. And you can only do that when you are producing energy inside your body. So, you know, you can't leave it up to chance. It's up to you. So yes, breathing, absolutely. Breathing is the number one thing we all need to be doing. If you think about the particularities of coronavirus.
I know, yeah.
It's all about remembering to breathe. So this alone is creating a shift in your energy field. There's more spaciousness. Yeah, and in the old paradigm, we were not able to be in harmony with our breath. Sometimes my body and my breath were telling me, like, I'm not ready to go outside. I'm not. I need time to be inside. And now I get a chance to do that. In a way, it's definitely a calling to reconnect with nature. We are a part of nature. We are not against nature. We're not different from nature. We need water. We need warmth. We need hugs. My God, do we need hugs? Mm-hmm. I mean, the warmth that is generated by human affection. If you weren't clear on how badly we needed it for survival, now you know. And we need communication. We need air in our lives. We need to communicate with other human beings. And we need earth. We need to be connected to the earth. We need to feel the earth on our feet. We need to feel grounded. We all need to feel like trees. Mm-hmm. If we can all feel like trees and walk around and navigate this reality from that place, then we can create a new society. Then really then that's really possible. And that's not idealistic. All you need is like to open your mind to these things that have been considered hippie or alternative or new age when they're incredibly ancient. Like you talked about colonization. That's what colonizers did. They try to cover up the fact that we are connected to nature and feed us this black and white thinking, right and wrong, so that we feel separate from other things. But all ancient religions recognize that we're all connected. Right. And we're all connected to everything, to little animals, cats and dogs and little birdies and trees, you know. It's so much more beautiful when we embrace that. And the societies that have been hit so hard, I mean, it's really everywhere. I can't say that. Even some indigenous communities, especially some indigenous communities, are suffering a lot right now. But I do think that societies that have forgotten that we're connected to nature need to do their part in remembering that it's time. And there needs to be so many of us to override the power that the dark force has right now. I mean, we're seeing it. We're seeing some of the darkest dark we've seen. And the only way to heal that is to heal it in ourselves. Like, it's all a reflection of darkness that's within us.
Yep.
It's all a mirror.
It is. And I think it's hard for people to look in the mirror.
Yeah.
It's really hard, but with the right guidance, you know, you can. And it's so interesting. I mean, you know, I've read and certain blog posts from a metaphysical viewpoint about, you know, the coronavirus, a part of it is how it affects your lungs and you know, ancient and Chinese medicine, and that's grief. Lots of unprocessed grief going on here, and the grief of Mother Earth, like speaking, like, please, you know, you're like, it's, I always say this, it's like, you know, I don't worry about the planet. Planet is fine. It's the people that are, you know, we're killing ourselves.
Yeah.
Can't take and take and take from this amazing resource, because Earth, she's resourceful. She'll grow that shit back. She'll just, you know, stamp out these pesky little bipeds that stand upright with opposable thumbs.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, not to make light, I'm not making light of the situation, but no, I absolutely agree with what you're saying about being able to, since we have the time, since a lot of us aren't working, since the world has mostly stopped, it is a time for reflection and to really get in touch with what's in your heart. And for a lot of people, that can be, that's a hard thing to do, because there's so many heartbreaks. And like you said, I mean, I talk about that in my work as well. Like, it's like having your heart broken is the way to healing, you know, going through. The only way out is through, right?
That's yes,
a common saying. But yeah, is finding some sort of practice, because a lot of people are having, and I've had my tough times as well. You know, I live with my partner, and that kind of came to a head, you know, just like what he's dealing with and his own inner darkness and light, and my dealing with mine and the collective darkness, you know, as an empath, just like just trying to filter all that through and channel it through and releasing it. And so there's a lot going on. And it never stopped. The pandemic was able to stop life as we know it for a bit to reconfigure. So I really hope that things can change. I get a little cynical about that, you know, like, there's a part of me that's like really very hopeful. And I'm like, yeah, I know what I can do. I know I have faith in myself. I have faith in most people. And then when I read these other things about some of, you know, beliefs that aren't mine, or people are acting the way, like, well, why the hell are you acting like that? You know, this is not a separation. Mm-hmm. And that's a really challenging thing. It's really challenging for me to say, like, yeah, Trump, this is all supposed to be happening, because it's happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that agent of change?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you
know, we don't want to say that, but it's true. It is absolutely true. Whether you like what he's doing, it's like, well, he is uncovering a lot of shit. Because if Hillary was in office, I don't think it would have been the same thing. He is uncovering a lot opening the curtains to what's going on. But bringing it back to our little world between me and you. So I just, because we're going on a little bit over an hour now, I just want to, you know, I had asked you in the beginning about, you know, why you felt it was necessary to bring this story forward. And, you know, I think everything that you had said just touches on confidence. I was like, well, I don't need to ask her what brings, because she just said it. What gives me confidence? But as a parting, before we leave, any parting words about confidence for healers and people emerging as healers or having healing gifts that they're just like, I don't know, who may not have had the same experience that you had of having a background in spirituality.
That's an interesting question. Thank you for asking. I think that a lot of souls are awakening to their power, and everyone's connected to the divine, whether you're conscious of it or not. And the divine loves you so very much that it wants to put you in service. Like, if you ask for it, it will put you in service. So just keep asking for that trust. Mm-hmm. And even if there are moments where you have doubt, I mean, in my journey, the only thing the divine has ever asked of me is to walk with confidence. So even if, because I know you said you like to curse, even if I fuck it up, and I do sometimes fuck it up, and I look at my own darkness and I'm like, wow, well, this still needs healing. And I'm humbled, and I return to the path with even greater trust. Because it's about embracing it all, even your doubts. If you truly feel a calling to serve humanity in some capacity, and it's not glamorous, it's not love and light, it's not. The energy work we set out to do with relatives or, you know, all kinds of people, sometimes even on the internet, some people are doing that. Well, it's not easy, but if you really feel that it's what you're here to do, then nobody can question that. Nobody can question anything that you believe to be true. And hopefully what you believe to be true is to contribute something positive while you're alive, and could contribute a part of your heart. And whatever your path is perfect. Every single person's path is individual to them. I know I had to travel very far to come to where I'm at, where I can wake up and look in the mirror and say, like, I like who you are, and thank you for still being here. And whatever it took to get me there, it was painful for me, but it doesn't have to. It's not painful for other people. I mean, to the same degree, and that doesn't mean that it's less valid.
Right.
It is all valid. Yeah. And maybe your path is one of, like, very tedious, like, studying and logical processing of information. Mine was particularly emotional, because I am also tapping into the feminine quite strongly, and just feeling life, you know, feeling life and feeling where it wants me to go. And that's part of my mission, but that does not mean that that is your mission or anyone's mission. I think we are all doing some service right now, including Donald Trump. He is in service, whether he is conscious of it or not. Right. He is a huge messenger of everything that we need to heal in ourselves. And and he's incredibly persistent about it. So
yeah,
that's true. So the work also is very persistent in us. Yeah. And that's a fact in myself. I know that when I feel like I'm in a good place with him and he triggers me, that I still have work to do.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, we're all in service. We truly are.
He's a great teaching tool. Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think what you were saying about confidence and your parting words, that's the most important thing, is just to trust, to ask. Mm-hmm. If you don't know where what's happening around mm-hmm. you physically or energetically, to ask whoever, mm-hmm. God, the universe, creator, source, sheet, whatever you call that, mm-hmm. ask for guidance and trust it. And that's the hardest thing on this, just being, trusting your intuition. That's the biggest roadblock that people have mm-hmm. as they enter just listening to their intuition and being open to it. It's like, is that voice for real? Like, yeah, no, that shit's for real. Listen to it.
Yes.
It may not be. Sometimes I think why we don't listen to it, because it's hard to make that decision. It's like, oh, you want me to do that? Oh shit, I don't really, you know, because it's mm-hmm. it's gonna bring some pain. Yeah. Some of us don't like to experience pain, me included.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. and then what's more painful, mm-hmm. listening to it or not?
Yeah.
Regardless, mm-hmm. whether you listen to it or not, it's all part of a journey. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. That's what I've been hearing mm-hmm. say. And that's the major takeaway, is just mm-hmm. part of a journey. Mm-hmm. People will come and go mm-hmm. physically. Pass mm-hmm. on, mm-hmm. break up. It's part of the journey mm-hmm. to embrace it. So
yes.
I just want to thank you for sharing such a beautiful story and sharing mm-hmm. that part of yourself with us and mm-hmm. being so open, and for your beautiful message for all mm-hmm. of us. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me and allowing me to share that. It felt right to do so. And
good.
Yeah, I hope that it inspires at least one person out there.
Exactly. That's my hope too. That's always my hope. So we will end this here. Thank you for being here. Let's give you a warm hug. Goodbye. This is The Confident Healer, and I'm your host, Sharmila Mali, and we'll see you next time.
Want to know more about how to contact my guest? Then go to theconfidenthealer.net. This is also the best place to listen to the podcast. And while you're there, click subscribe to rate the show. Let's get those algorithms working to get this podcast to the masses.